Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Our guest right now is going to help us through what is happening with the vaccine situation. Dr. Noel Yeo is the COO of IHH Healthcare Singapore. Dr. Yeo, welcome to Weekend Morning. So glad to have you with us.
Good morning, Glenn and Neil. Good morning. Happy to be here.
And I brought my vaccine passport specifically to show Singaporeans what eventually we will all be holding. Something similar anyway.
And before we get started, Noel, congratulations on your recent promotion to Chief Operating Officer of IHH Healthcare. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be up to with this new position.
Well, I think apart from looking after business operations in Singapore for my group, what's coming up this year is to help the nation and all our people get vaccinated as safely and as quickly as possible. I think this is the mission that all, if not all of the healthcare workers in Singapore are looking forward to.
Yeah, I think we all are. And we saw the first jabs being given this past week here in Singapore to frontline workers. Where exactly are we, as far as what you know, what is the plan right now for vaccine rollout across Singapore?
What I've heard from the Ministry of Health is that we have about a few phases of vaccination. The first phase has started on Wednesday, where we have around 40 healthcare workers in total been vaccinated. These are workers who are at the National Center for Infectious Diseases, and rightfully so. I'm very glad that they are receiving the vaccine first. And we're looking at this being phase one, where the healthcare workers and the frontline workers will get vaccinated. I think the estimated time it takes will be between 6 to 8 weeks or so. And thereafter, we can move on to phase two, which will be vaccination of vulnerable subpopulation groups in Singapore, which I'm talking about the elderly, those who are at risk because of comorbidities, and perhaps those who are immobile, right, have difficulty getting to vaccination centres or the hospitals. And the last group will be the essential workers, people who are required to keep Singapore functioning. Mm. And moving, that will be the last phase, which is the rest of the population. Like the both of you.
Well, I'll get it later than Glenn because I'm much younger than Glenn. So let's get that right. He's in the vulnerable category.
I am very much at risk in many ways.
No, not at all. No, what I wanted to ask you, Noel, let's just recap for the benefit of our listeners and viewers. There are many vaccines out there and there's still some skepticism around. What is the vaccine that we're using at the moment? What is its efficiency? Just tell us some general point on why we should have it, basically.
Sure. The vaccine that has been approved by Health Sciences Authority in Singapore is the one that is manufactured by Pfizer and BioNTech. Now, that is an mRNA vaccine. But I wanted to give people an overview of the number of vaccine candidates. We have more than 50 vaccine candidates worldwide in clinical trials, and we have more than 160 of them under preclinical trials. So that's many vaccine candidates being manufactured, being developed at the same time. Now, we have five main categories of vaccines. I've mentioned mRNA vaccines. That's the one by Pfizer BioNTech. The other ones would be the Moderna one and the one that's been locally developed by the Duke NUS, which is called Arcturus. Now, these are mRNA vaccines. There are another four more types. We have the virus vector vaccines, like the one from AstraZeneca and the one from Gamaleya. These are virus vector. We also have inactivated virus vaccines from Sinovac. We have protein subunit vaccines from Novavax and Sanofi Pasteur. And finally, virus-like particle vaccines from Medicago. So there are many types of vaccines being developed. Now we have mRNA vaccines that are, you know, it's been approved and in use in Singapore. I thought it would be good to share how mRNA vaccine works. This vaccine contains a messenger RNA. That's why it's called mRNA. It carries instructions to produce spike protein on the virus. And this mRNA used in the vaccine is synthesized. It's not extracted. So that's first thing. We must clarify that the mRNA used in the vaccine is not extracted from actual viruses. And that's important. Number two, the vaccine works by being administered to the intramuscular area, so usually on our deltoid. And the cells taken up locally around the area will then produce the spike protein according to the instructions by the mRNA. And when we have spike proteins on the cell, this then stimulates a good antibody and cellular immune response. And this then protects the vaccinated person from the COVID-19 virus.
So what does this, now, interrupt, what does the spike proteins actually do? Do they sort of penetrate that crown on the virus? What do they actually do in layman's terms?
Spike proteins are located on the virus. It is a part of the virus.
Right.
And we identify that through the test, which is conducted by our scientists. Then we have the mRNA that teaches our cells to produce this spike protein. Right. But producing this spike protein alone, it doesn't make you get any infection. So it is a safe part of the virus that we are teaching our own cells to manufacture. And with this spike protein present on our own cells, then we'll have an immune response to produce antibodies that work against spike proteins, such that when the virus invades our body, with the spike proteins also on the virus, our antibodies will then attack it, right, and prevent the infection. So we want to clarify the second point is that these spike proteins, as a good question from Neil, they are incapable of becoming viruses and they cannot cause COVID-19 infection.
Right.
So the second point is very important.
Yeah.
Now, the third thing that many of us heard of is the question of whether mRNA changes our DNA. So now, third point to clarify, it does not. The mRNA only persists for a few days after entering the body, and then it gets naturally broken down by us. It does not enter the nucleus of the cell. It does not interfere with the DNA. So that's the third clarification that is important for our listeners to hear.
Well, I was kind of hoping I'd get Tom Cruise's DNA after this, but apparently not.
We're talking with Dr. Noel Yeo, the COO of IHH Healthcare. Singapore, would be familiar with the brands like Mount Elizabeth, Glen Eagles, Parkway, Fortis. These are the hospitals in that IHH Healthcare ecosystem. And Noel, when we look at these vaccines, we've heard a couple of cases already in the U.S. where somebody got their first jab, and between the time of their first jab and their second jab, they actually contracted COVID-19. Are these two, the ones that we're going to get here in Singapore, are they two jab shots or just one?
Okay, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is a two-jab vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
So it consists of two doses that is administered 21 days apart. The other one, which is called the Moderna vaccine, that one is also a two-dose regime, 28 days apart. So we are looking at a two-dose regime for most of us. Mm. The good news is what I've heard about the Arcturus vaccine that's been co-developed by Duke NUS, that one is a single-dose vaccine.
Have you heard about this case where somebody contracted or potentially contracted COVID between the two doses? Is that something that is real, that we should be concerned about?
Yes, and I think we have to first establish the fact that there is no 100% protection, even after the vaccine. The phase 3 trials have proven that the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine offers up to 95% efficacy, which means that you have a 5% chance of a breakthrough infection. Mm. Now, that's upon completing the two doses and after about 5 weeks from your first dose. That's when you achieve a 95% protection. Now, in between doses, what I've heard is that after the first dose is given, your body needs around 8 to 10 days or so to develop that first wave of protection. And it's roughly estimated to be about 50%. Then you need your second dose 3 weeks later before you get the other half of protection. So it doesn't mean that once you get the first dose, you are ready to go marry. You are ready to remove your mask. No, don't practice hand hygiene or, start hugging everyone, kissing. It doesn't work this way. Everyone still needs to understand that you need to continue with your own basic safe distancing measures, your wearing of face masks and your hand hygiene.
So if the timeline is correct that you had pointed out a little bit earlier, it's realistically going to be the end of 2021 before all of us in Singapore are getting the vaccine. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so. Because if you think about it, and taking that case study from Israel, I think both of you must have heard about how fast Israel has been in vaccinating their population. To give you an idea of how fast they were, they managed to inoculate 1 million of their population, a total of 9.3, in just about 2 weeks or so. That's extremely fast, and they are doing around maybe 80,000 to 90,000 people a day. I think for us in Singapore, realistically, if we assume that we will, all of us will be getting two shots, I assume that maybe about 5 million or so people will be receiving it. Mm-hmm. That's looking at something like 80 to 90% population agreeing for the vaccine. We're looking at 25,000 shots a day if we want to complete it in 365 days. And that is an astonishing number, even by Singapore standards. So it's not going to be easy. No. But I think it's highly possible if we can get all our resources, if we can educate the public quickly through medias like and people like yourselves, and that will help us to save time when people come to the vaccination centres or to the clinics.
Yeah, but of course the risk will reduce as more and more people are vaccinated anyway, right? So in theory, even like 3 months, 6 months, 7 months, the risk of people who are not yet vaccinated catching it will reduce anyway because there are less people who can get it, right?
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. Because okay. Now it has been proven that, okay, maybe I should clarify that statement a little. The clinical studies now has proven that the 95% protection is in preventing symptomatic infection and severe forms of the disease. It is not yet proven that you can't carry the disease asymptomatically, and neither has it been proven to prevent onward transmission of the disease.
Right.
I think that the assumption we can make that is that if yourselves are protected, you know, you're not going to suffer from the illness, and therefore you will not, you know, be succumbed to all the other factors like the loss of income when you're hospitalized,
right,
or your fears and the worries of your family. You can save all of that once you get yourself vaccinated. Yeah.
Okay, we've got a couple of questions coming in from our listeners. I want to get to them while I've got time. Indeed. And NH Huang says, and point out if any of this is not quite right, or with the mRNA disappearing from our bodies within a couple of days, does it mean that our bodies will only produce the spike protein during those 2 to 3 days, or does the body continue to produce the spike protein even after that?
No, so the mRNA only teaches that cells that is located around the site of infection to develop the spike proteins. So the listener is correct. Once the mRNA vaccine is broken down by the body, there is no persistence of production of the spike protein.
Okay, so then is it not possible to then get another case of infection a week or two or a month later?
It's not entirely possible to get the infection thereafter, but you know that your risks are definitely lowered. Again, I mentioned earlier, if you have one shot, you have about 50% protection after 8 to 10 days, after your antibodies and immune response have reached optimal levels. When you get your second shot subsequently, then you get the other half of that protection and it escalates up to 95%. That is exactly why we need to take a booster shot, the second shot thereafter.
Got it.
And if spike proteins remain persistent in the body, then there will be no need for us to get a second shot also. Correct?
Right.
It makes sense based on clinical studies. It ties in. So mRNA doesn't stay in the body for long. It teaches your body to produce the spike proteins. Thereafter, it's broken down entirely.
Got it.
And you get that 50% after 2 weeks. Okay. Then you follow up with the second shot. You get your 95% protection after a total of 5 weeks from your first shot.
Got it. Okay. I was trying to get all our questions in from our listeners and viewers. They're writing in pretty quickly. LL Tan has said, what happens, and this is a common response, a common concern, what happens if a person gets a jab because of an adverse reaction? Let me just get that. Another one's come in. What's the repercussions? Will he be worse off? You know, there's this concern, isn't there, that there will be adverse reactions to the jab where the negatives might potentially outweigh the positives. Is that a legitimate concern, Doctor?
Yes, I think in all medical treatments, including vaccinations, we always weigh the benefits against the risk. Right? There's no treatment that is zero risk. That's the first point that we all must understand. Mm. And now coming to the second point, then what are the type of risk we are exposed to? From what we know about the COVID-19 vaccine, the risk pretty low to start off, and the types of side effects are very minor. For example, you might experience injection site pain, some fatigue, fever, muscle aches, headaches. Very, very common. It happens also in flu vaccines and other type of vaccines that we have received because of our national immunization program. Now, I know many of us have heard about the serious adverse effect, which is that anaphylactic reaction from certain individuals. I think that is pretty much in line with most vaccines.
Yeah.
And it happens in people who have a history of allergies, a history of anaphylaxis before. And that's why there is currently a warning that we shouldn't, for those people with a history of allergies, you should not be undergoing the vaccination for now, until more data is present.
And we know Noel, we just have a couple of minutes left because we're bumping up toward the top of the hour. But a question from Aloysius Lee, and I know you're not a government representative, but tell us your opinion on this. Aloysius is concerned that there are so many imported cases now.
Yeah.
34 imported cases today, 33. How can that happen? He thought everyone had to go for a COVID test and get a negative result before getting on board a plane to come into Singapore. Do you know what that current status is for coming in? Of course, those people have been put on stay home notice, et cetera. What is that current situation, people coming into Singapore? How can so many people import cases?
Good point.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And thanks for pointing out that I'm not a government person. I can see that from observations. Firstly, is we have to accept that there will be this increased risk of having imported cases as we try to open up our economy again. Now, that is something that we all have to accept. First point. The second point is that while we accept that risk, we do know that the government has put in many measures to help us control that risk and to mitigate it. So you take, for example, the two recent incidents, one being the cruise ship that we had that false positive, and also the 13 cases who were found linked at the Mandarin Hotel in Orchard. I thought these are fantastic examples of how fast our agencies can react if we find something missing, we find something that is wrong. So we need to know that, yes, there will be risk when we open up with the economies, but we do know that we have mitigation factors, measures in place. And I think I want to address what the question is about, that we do know that even after taking a COVID swab test, there will be chances of a false negative.
Yeah.
It does happen, right? Even though PCR has been proven to be more than 90% accurate, there will always be that chance.
So as a medical professional, would you suggest to our listeners that we might have to accept a slight increase? We must have to adjust our mindset and accept a slight increase in imported cases as we slowly open up the economy and not panic about it, basically.
Yes, you absolutely. I think that this is something we all should be mindful of and aware of. And that's precisely why we have all these stringent measures. We have, you know, we make use of technology and IT to track people. We have people put on quarantine on stay home notices once they are coming to Singapore. So these are all ways of managing that risk and such that they don't become community transmission cases.
Yeah. Dr. Noel Yeo, thanks so much for being with us today. Appreciate your time and all your information about vaccines. We'll definitely have you on again to get more of these questions answered.
Sure. All right. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, Neil.
Thanks, man.
Happy New Year.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.